Well, folks, you know you're in for a treat when you hear that tune, because it's another week of the Rec Poker Podcast coming at you. And I know I'm hitting the audio cues because everyone in the Zoom chat's bouncing around, having a good time getting started on the show here, which I love to see. My name's Jim Reed. I've got the best freaking job in the world. I'm Bluffstarini in the Home Game Club, or at Rec Poker Jim on Twitter and Threads. And the reason I've got the best freaking job in the world is because every Monday night I get to hang out here with my poker friends and talk about poker on the Rec Poker Podcast. We're going to be talking to Zach, the CPA, in just a moment. But first, I have to thank our sponsors, the Running Aces Hotel, Racetrack, and Casino, without whom we would not be here today. So we had a fantastic time at their Rec Poker weekend just a few weeks ago. We've got some more exciting news coming up with them in the next little while. And I've got to thank some premium members. Since we last talked, we've had a few premium members join our group. Ben Gears, who was a premium member a while ago, has been a community member for a long time and is getting back into studying and taking his game to the next level. So he got back into the premium membership pool here. It was fun to see you at Running Aces there as well, Ben. And then Jennifer Michael, who I haven't had the chance to meet yet, but Jennifer, thanks for your support. Marion Miskowski. I also don't know. I haven't had a chance to meet Marion yet, but they're going to be hearing from me over a one-to-one Zoom call like all our new premium members get. And I'll find out about them and how to unlock the best features about their membership here. And Sasha Sutton, a fantastic player who lives in Las Vegas and is a cash game grinder down there. Sasha was one of the people that participated in our meetup game at the MGM Grand during WSOP. And you're going to be hearing a lot more from Sasha around here. So I'm excited to be welcoming our new premium members, because they're the other people that make all the magic happen around here, along with the Wrecking Crew. And the last people I have to thank and introduce are the Wrecking Crew members. They put their time in every day, every week, every month to make all the magic happen around here. And if you want to find out more about me and the rest of the Wrecking Crew, you can go to rec.poker/crew. But you can also just listen up, because you're going to meet a few of them right here on the air tonight. Starting with Ben Enslow. We got to sneak one in before we get to producing co-host John Somsky. Ben, great to hear your voice, man.
We get to dethrone Chris this week. I'm super excited about it. It's been a couple months that I've been hearing Chris Jones. So finally get to hear my name at the top of the list again. So that's good. Nice. I'm BJMN96 over on Twitch. All my social media is over there, so you guys can check me out over there. And I'm East Coast Bitter in the home game.
And I'm John Somsky, also known as Poker Geek MM everywhere.
My name is Joe Coolis. You can find me on Twitter at Joe Cool PhD, cool with a K, or Elvita 11 in the home game.
And I'm Keith Brandt, and I'm Monkey System pretty much everywhere.
Well, thanks, gang. So that's it. We've thanked the sponsors. We've celebrated some new premium members. We've introduced the Wrecking Crew. It's time to start the interview. Zach, you are Zach the CPA. That's how people can find you on Twitter. That's the website. Thanks for coming on the Rec Poker Podcast. I think we're going to get to some pretty interesting places in this interview today.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk about tax. Like I said, I know that not a lot of people are, but I'm here to hopefully answer some questions that you guys have.
Yeah. Great. So folks, if you're watching away in the YouTube chat, if you're one of our live audience members, feel free to just type any questions for Zach in there. And of course, we'll be doing our raffle at the end of the show to support a local food bank. So make sure to stick around to the end of the show if you're in the YouTube chat and win a prize just for showing up. So Zach, it's such an interesting niche that you've chosen here. You just talking to you briefly, you obviously really know what you're talking about. You've got a very strong Twitter game. You have these fantastic articles that come out every once in a while, really kind of accessing an interesting element of the poker world today from a tax point of view. What led you into this particular area of the industry? Why poker taxes in particular?
Yeah, I grew up in the mid 2000s where, you know, Absolute and kind of online poker was a big thing. So I always took an interest in playing poker. But then after I graduated college, I moved out to the West Coast, moved out to Las Vegas. And just as it is the hub of gambling, just out around a lot of gamblers. And I worked for a firm and we just started to kind of work with gamblers more than any other type of player. And I realized that gamblers are not only the taxes are not their focus, but at the same time, the tax code is inherently unfavorable to gamblers. So I felt like it was a good niche to go ahead and help the players that may not be focusing on necessarily the tax part of things. And then also inform them and educate them to say, hey, look, here are some of the things where it's inherently unfavorable, and here's maybe some ways we can work around it.
Yeah, and that's a good point. So I talk about poker players, but I know gamblers are a bigger, you know, set of people that have to worry about tax compliance. When you talk about these folks, do you mean specifically players that play for fun or professional gamblers or a mix of both? Because I'm sure the responsibilities are different from one to the other.
Yeah, it runs the gamut. It's probably more recreational players now, especially with the expansion of gambling in general, whether it's sports mm-hmm. betting or poker. But there's definitely a fair amount of professional gamblers, and there are different considerations whether you're filing as a recreational or professional. A lot of the unfavorable tax code unfavorable things from the tax code are aimed at recreational bettors. So there's a lot of things, especially with, like I said, the expansion of sports betting that people are now finding out it's going to hurt them from a tax standpoint. So trying to inform all these people, whether it's in at the state level or the federal level, just to understand what's going to happen before they go ahead and start making those bets.
Well, I'm sure we're going to get some questions from the YouTube chat and from our panelists here, but let's just start off by going a little deeper into that. So what are some of the ramifications that we might, as recreational players or gamblers, that we might not be thinking about, but that are there things that we're responsible for that we're not aware of, or are there things that might be withheld from us if we're not savvy about how we handle this kind of stuff?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is going to be just record keeping. That goes for both recreational players and for professional gamblers. Not exactly at the top of a lot of people's lists to make sure that you track every session that you're doing, whether it's poker or sports betting or table games. But if you're tracking all of your sessions accurately, it doesn't matter if you receive a W2G for a tournament score or for a slot machine pull, you're going to base all of your reporting on your records. And it's important because let's just say after a poker tournament, you go and, you know, play slot machines and you might have three or four W2Gs or whatever the case may be. For that session, the casino or the IRS shows you up $10,000. But in reality, you played through all that money and the session was a net loss. So from a reporting standpoint, if you did not use the session method, you're going to go ahead and report $10,000 of gambling winnings for that day and $10,000 of losses. But in reality, you could have just reported nothing because you are using the session method that's provided by the IRS. And that's important because when you file as a recreational gambler, your gambling winnings will increase your adjusted gross income. And the IRS uses your adjusted gross income as a base figure for a lot of things. It could be for certain credits or certain deductions. You could potentially get phased out of health insurance benefits if you are getting subsidies for your health insurance. Or if you're retired, it could also potentially make some of your Social Security taxable. So the goal is to minimize your adjusted gross income if you're a recreational gambler. That way there's no ancillary negatives or drawbacks when you go ahead and file that return.
So this is really interesting because I come at this as a Canadian. So in Canada, our winnings as recreational players are not taxed. So they're considered a windfall and we don't have to pay tax on them. We don't have to declare them. But what I'm just thinking about here, kind of naively, is that, of course, I also don't have to worry about how that'll affect the other aspects of my life if I get pushed into a different tax bracket or past some certain threshold or something like that. So so forgive my ignorance, but this actually feels like it must be very relevant to basically anyone who's gambling in the United States, because if you have a big score, there are going to be ramifications for that. And let me ask you this. So let's say you have a big score in like November and you haven't been keeping session records throughout the entire year. You might be down significantly as a recreational gambler over the course of the first 10 months of the year. Is it too late to now start getting your books in order now that you've hit this big score? What do people do?
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things that I try to preach to clients is you never know, especially as tournament players, when that big score is going to come. So if you're not tracking everything you're doing, even if it's insignificant play, whether it's, you know, you're primarily a tournament player and you play a couple one-off cash games or you go to the tables, whatever it is, even if you know, hey, look, I'm down $10,000 on the year, all of a sudden, like you said, all of a sudden you win a $50,000 tournament. If you weren't tracking that $10,000 worth of losses that you already have, it's really going to be hard for you to go back and recreate 10 months worth of gambling records. I have a hard time recreating, you know, what I did 2 weeks ago, let alone, right, you know, 10 months ago. So it's going to be really challenging for you to do that. And then in the case of an audit, if you try to go back retroactively, the IRS is not going to love that. They want to see something that's kept contemporaneously. So really the important thing that the foundation of all of this for recreationals or professionals is to just make sure in whatever format you find is easiest for you to track your sessions and the amount of information that you think is necessary, you can always go through. So if you're playing a tournament, you just jot down the name of the casino menu, where you played, the date, what the stakes were, what your buy-in amount was, and then what the result was. And that would be fine for tournament play.
John, you unmuted first, and then I think Keith also had a question.
Yeah, so my question was, nowadays, most poker rooms make you actually sign in with the card whenever you play a tournament. So presumably they have all of the tournaments that you've registered for. Of course, they don't necessarily know what the payout was if it did not reach that threshold to actually be reported. Would that help with your case of rebuilding past events, I guess?
Yeah, if you're strictly a tournament game player or a tournament player, you could probably use those records. I wouldn't say to only rely on them, but pretty consistently. Since almost every venue I've ever gone to has required a player's card of some kind to register for a tournament, they're actually going to have your, most of the time, your finishing place and the amount of money that you were paid out, even if it wasn't reportable. So if you go down to the World Series and, you know, you win $2,500 in an event, if you get your printout at the end of the year, it's still going to show that you had a $1,000 buy-in and won $2,500 in that event. So if you're strictly a tournament player, you will have that to fall back on. But I've seen weirder things happen where something's wrong or there's tournaments missing or the casino's not able to go back and get that information. So I'd rely on my records first, and then worst case scenario, also go ahead and contact the casino and then have it corroborate your records.
Yeah, smart. Keith?
Yeah, are there any apps or online downloadable forms or anything or resources that can help you to keep good records like this that you would recommend?
There are a few apps, but the more I do this and the more people I talk to, the more times I hear that the app either crashed or is no longer available. They lost their phone. So when everything is kept on an app, poker players seem to lose their phones more than other types of gamblers. So all of your records go with your phone if you end up losing that and it's not backed up. So my recommendation is just a simple Google Sheet. You can set it up however you want. I say Google Sheet just because then it's accessible from your phone. You can also use an Excel file, obviously, but might be a little bit harder to get into that on your mobile device. So just track, have different spreadsheets for tournaments, for cash games, for table games, slot machines, whatever type of gambling you're doing, just kind of separate and have a worksheet for each one. That way, if something happens to your phone or whatever happens, you're at least, it's saved in the cloud or any type of spreadsheet where you can just access it from the internet.
Joe, you had something?
Yeah, so I just want to make sure I understand it, because basically I think what you're saying is that only the winnings from tournament plays and buy-ins from tournaments are being reported. So if you don't use your card at any of the casinos for any of their benefits, then none of that actually is being reported directly. And then it's just basically relying upon your own documentation for any losses that you may have. Is it a fair characterization?
Yeah. So for tournaments, they're going to have most likely the results just because they require you to use the card. But if you're going to go play slots or table games, most places won't require you to do that. Or you might have a card and you might just not swipe in that day. Mm-hmm. What I tell people is if you're going to be tracking your sessions, put yourself in the casino. That way it's another thing that corroborates your records. So if you're swiping in your player's card, if you're playing cash, or if you're playing slots or table games, you can say, hey, look, I can go back through my player's card history. They have me, I earned, you know, 10 comp dollars this day because I played for 8 hours. and this 8 hours matches my records. And then even if you can't prove, I mean, let's just say you have a running cash bankroll and you can't prove that how much money specifically you lost on that day, you can at least put yourself there for 8 hours. And it shows the agent or auditor, whoever's reviewing the files, that you kept pretty accurate records.
So I'm just going to a quick follow up. I mean, is it more important than to be seen? Because contemporaneous notes, I mean, I could just write down every day, lost $1,000, lost $1,000, lost $1,000. And it doesn't matter what I win. That's going to be sufficient for the IRS in terms of saying, yeah, you must have, as long as I wandered through the casino for a few minutes every day. Or is that really more, well, at least it gives you something to compare your winnings versus your losses for?
Yeah, I mean, ideally, you're going to be tracking what's actually occurring. But if you have a very comprehensive log and some of the figures are inaccurate, unless the agent is asking every day for something to prove, then it might get by. I can't recommend that. But what I really recommend for cash game players, and I understand that this is very challenging to do, but you pick a time period, let's just say it's 2 weeks, and you start a new bankroll on that first day. Then your records for that 2 weeks will track your running bankroll. At the end of the 2 weeks, you deposit the entire bankroll, and then you take out a new bankroll and start another 2 weeks. That way you have defined periods. And if the agent ever says, hey, look, what happened in this 2 week period? You can say, well, look at my bank transfer on February 15th. It is the aggregate sum of the first 2 weeks of play of February.
Gotcha. And I'm not suggesting anybody do anything illegal.
Right. No. I know. Yeah.
That's what Keith is going to do. Keith is going to do that, but I'm not.
It's challenging because everyone I understand has cash bankrolls, especially when they go into poker series. So it's just, you have to be extra diligent when you're only transacting in cash and there's nothing that shows money going in and out, let alone it's going between people for swapping or whatever you guys end up doing. It's just very challenging to track the flow of money and then have an agent understand kind of how this lifestyle works.
Yeah. So you've sort of described both the like cash accrual method and then also like the actual log method. And I can imagine like for a lot of recreational players, like you say, we're taking a trip somewhere. We're going to play some tournament, some cash. We're going to spend some money on stupidly overpriced coffees and sandwiches. We're going to tip, you know, so like having a way to make sure you know where all those different dollars are going. We talk on the show a lot about how like keeping good records actually makes you a better poker player too. Like it's not just about getting your taxes in line. It actually will help you stay accountable to yourself better if you actually know how much you're winning and losing per session and that sort of thing.
Yeah. It serves more than one purpose from just from a tax perspective. It also helps, like you said, get everything else in line. And it's great just to have, even if you never get audited, it's perfect to have just as records for you to understand what's happening with your bankroll.
Mm-hmm. And so what about things like, and maybe this will come into more for players that are filing as a pro, but what can you count against those winnings? Obviously your losses, if you're keeping track of all that sort of stuff. What about things like tips at the table or, you know, travel expenses or, you know, food while you're at the casino or things like that? Do you have to be a pro to count those? And is that one of the reasons why people file as a pro? Because that'll be another question that I'm interested in talking about.
Yeah, you do have to be a pro to deduct any expenses related to your play. So when you file as a pro, your filing is self-employed. So you're entitled to any necessary and reasonable expenses that are related to your business. So for poker players, usually travel would be the largest one. That's going to be airfare, hotel stays, and then any meals while you're traveling. Then the next one would probably be meals. It's not meals necessarily while you're playing, but it's meals while you're maybe meeting with a coach or discussing hand histories, meals where it's not just you doing the work. In the same vein, you can do coaching or study materials. So if you're paying a coach directly, or you are subscribing to an online forum or a coaching site, anything that you do in that regard would be deductible. You can do software. So if you're paying for a HUD or some type of GTO trainer, those would also be good to go. Equipment. So if you're playing online, you have multiple monitors, or you bought a new cell phone or tablet so you can play the mobile events, online events, whatever you want to do there. Again, it's limited to your business percentage use. So if you buy a tablet and you're using it 50% of the time for you personally and 50% of the time for the business, you can only deduct half, but it's still something. If you're playing online, you can potentially take a home office deduction. So depending on the size of the room, you can take a percentage of the cost of running the home, or just a standard, you know, $5 per square foot, what the IRS gives you. This is not as relevant for poker players, but if you have any contractors, so if you're an Advantage player and you're scouting games or anything along those lines, if you're paying people to do anything for you in that regard, you can get that as a deduction. And then you can do your cell phone, you can do portion of internet. Right. If you drive to events, you can do mileage on your car. If you pay an accountant or a lawyer, you can deduct legal fees. And if you're paying backers or you have a safety deposit box, there's really a ton of expenses that you can deduct. It's really just what type of expenses do you have that you think are necessary and ordinary, and then you can go ahead and make a case for them.
So before I let Joe and John dive back in, I got a follow up then. So again, like I was thinking about this earlier when I was thinking about this interview in Canada, like you don't have to pay taxes on the winnings as a recreational player. So you'd really need an incentive to file as a pro. But it sounds like from what I'm hearing from you talking about down there, if you have to pay taxes on your winnings as a recreational player anyway, like why aren't more people filing as a pro where they then get to at least write off a lot of these expenses against the money that they're going to make?
So the difference between filing as a recreational gambler and a pro gambler, it's very gray. So there's no specific definition saying, oh, this person can file as a recreational or this person can't. You really have to take into account a set of guidelines and interpret them. The downside of filing as a professional gambler is you have to pay self-employment tax in the US. So it's a 15.3% flat tax on your net earnings. So if you have $100,000 worth of winnings, but let's say $40,000 worth of expenses, you'll pay income tax on $60,000, and then you'll also pay self-employment tax on that $60,000. Mm. So in certain scenarios, filing as a pro is going to end up being more expensive, but you can't really always look at it from a tax perspective. We have to make sure that the way that you're pursuing gambling, if you're pursuing it as a professional gambler, well, whether or not you're going to pay more tax as a professional gambler or not, we need to make sure you file that way. And then once we figure that out, we can say, okay, what are other ways now that you're self-employed that we can try to get the tax bill down?
I like the way you put that. John, yeah, you were next.
I just had a question. Regarding to tipping, particularly on like out of your tournament winnings, even if you're going recreationally, can you still deduct the tip from your net earnings?
If you're recreational, no. If you're playing cash games and it's part of your ongoing stack, it's a little bit different because you're really just going to track your net win and net losses from that session. You could make the case for tipping as a recreational gambler, but I would leave that to as a deduction for professional gamblers just because you're already receiving the gross winnings. Let's say it's $2,000, and then you are voluntarily going ahead and giving that $20. I understand that it's kind of the same as a cash game, but the way that it works, I would say it's not going to be something that you'd want to deduct.
Yeah, and that's interesting. Joe, go ahead.
I don't know. I mean, I was just kind of following up in terms of in what qualifies for a pro. So for instance, I already have a pass-through private practice that I have schedules. I file Schedule C yearly and have my deductions for a variety of things. And it seems to me that the self-employment taxes would not be that great, you know, in terms of overall what I'm already putting in for it. So if you already have a business running, that sounds like a personal question. I don't want it to be, I guess, in some degree beyond the self-employment taxes, is there really any downsides to filing as a pro if you can deduct so much more of your expenses and essentially get a discount on those trips in comparison to, you know, what your winnings are in terms of what you have to pay in taxes?
Yeah, the filing as a professional gambler, there's a little bit different bar for self-employment versus, you know, if you're running a car wash on the side or you're doing a detailing business, whatever it is, the IRS is going to look at that type of business, or, you know, you're doing accounting. They're going to say, hey, look, yep, you're self-employed, not a problem. It's when you have gambling winnings that now all of a sudden the burden to prove that you're a professional gambler is slightly different. So even if you have a W-2 job, you still can file as a professional gambler. The IRS might challenge you, but as long as you can present the evidence that you believe makes you a professional gambler, then that's fine. Because when the IRS looks at somebody who has a typical, you know, 9-to-5 job, they're going to say, well, you can't be pursuing gambling full-time because you have a full-time job. But it's kind of like a sport, baseball, whatever it is. Just because I'm not at the table for, you know, 20 hours a week doesn't mean I'm not training or discussing hand histories or just being involved in poker. So when I go to the casino, I'm going to be able to be more successful. So if you can prove that you're putting in a lot of hours, that you have, you know, your goal is to obviously be profitable. It's not just, you're not going just to have fun and splash around. And there's going to be some type of, you know, long-term profit. Really, I would tell you to open up a separate bank account for your bankroll as well. That way you can show the IRS that you're serious about this. That way there's, you won't be mingling your personal funds and your business funds. So it's really how you approach it. And then if you can present that story to the IRS, then they'll understand that you are treating this like a business and it should be looked at that way.
I do want to follow up because I think it's, so I do have a full-time job and a pass-through that provides me with sufficient income that nobody's ever challenged it. If I were to put in a third, I mean, I guess the question is there anything besides just study materials and enough volume and you know some measure of profit that would be necessary to show that it's a business rather than just throwing money around?
No, I mean, the IRS provides a 9-bullet point list as to what considered something between a hobby and a business. If you can go through that list, again, it's slightly different for gamblers, but if you can make a case on more than half of those, and then you can say, hey, look, I am doing all of these things, and I would see no reason why you wouldn't be able to do that. Now, if you're playing or if you're putting 2 to 3 hours in a week, it's going to be a hard sell there. But if you are actively pursuing it and you are putting in some good hours and then the results are there and you're doing everything else to treat it like a business, then I see no reason why you wouldn't be able to do that.
Do you have a schedule for the form that lists the steps, the guidelines?
Yeah, we can send, it's on the, actually on the IRS website. Yeah, I can send you guys a link to it if you'd like. It's That'd not a official publication. It's more just a guideline.
Perfect. That'd be great. Thank you.
Yeah.
I knew we were going to find some interesting little rabbit holes here because, you know, poker players, we're always kind of like looking to find our ways around the edges of things too, you know, and I think there's a reason why a lot of the rules here are just like, well, just be diligent and take good notes and, you know, like just keep track of everything with excellent record keeping skills, because at the end of the day, that's what we have to go on for a lot of the stuff. It's not like there's no secret sprinkle of powder you can dash on this and make it work. It's really just about like being organized and keeping your books accurately, right?
Right. And technically poker players kind of have an advantage because the bar is so low with record keeping that if you are audited for gambling winnings and you show up with everything we just talked about, you're already going to be in the 95th percentile of information for an agent to have. So yeah, since they've probably dealt with other taxpayers in the past that are just completely unorganized when it comes to gambling winnings, if you have all that information you can present it, you're already way ahead of the game.
Yeah, that makes sense. Keith?
Yeah, I got a question about state income taxes. Different states treat it differently. If you, like, I travel around the Midwest and play tournaments. Do I have to file a state tax for in every state where I won prize money?
Technically, you should be. Now, do people do that? 99% of the time, they don't. Certain states have thresholds to where you may or may not need to file. So if you have, you know, a small score in the state, they may not even require you to file, even if it was, you know, $2,000 or $3,000. Other states, they might. So if you go to California and you win $5,000, California might just hold 7% tax right off the top and say, hey, look, you have to file a tax return at the end of the year just to make sure that you're filing everything correctly. And you may or may not get a refund for some of that money. But if you're playing in 10 states each year and 10 states assess income tax, you should be looking at those standards and comparing them to your session records and saying, hey, look, $500 is one here, $10,000 is one here, and seeing if you actually need to file in those states.
Good answer. Joe, you were next, I think.
Do you have any idea what percentage of gamblers are audited in a particular year? I know that, you know, in-home businesses tend to be one of the higher rates of auditing, particularly on the lower income scale, let's just say, because of the complexity. Do you have a sense for how often that occurs?
The IRS is not very good at giving out numbers when it comes to audits. They give you general audit rates. General audit rates are quite low. They're under 1%. But what some gamblers do receive. It's not necessarily an audit. It's just an automated notice from the IRS. So if you're going to go ahead and use the session method and you say, hey, look, total of my winning sessions was $20,000, the IRS might have $45,000 of W-2Gs on record for you. So if you file a tax return showing $20,000 of gambling winnings, automated division is going to automatically kick out a notice and say, hey, you didn't report $25,000 worth of this income. So that's not an audit. It's easily responded. You just say, hey, look, I disclosed this. I used the session method and it's put to bed. But those automated notices go out quite frequently if that's the method that you end up choosing. So from an audit perspective, hard to give you a number. I would say that if you're a recreational gambler, you're just going to fall within the normal audit rate, which is going to be slightly under 1%. But then if you're, again, using the session method, don't be surprised if you get a notice from the IRS, but again, easily handled if you just send them a response.
Ben?
Yeah, I was just curious, because Jim was saying about how he was, you know, the Canadian aspect of it, and I'm also Canadian, but I haven't had the opportunity to travel to the States for poker yet. I'm hoping to at some point, but I was just wondering, besides keeping track of your buy-ins and things that you've already mentioned, is there anything in particular for international travelers when they come to the States, what you should be keeping in mind as far as, you know, taxes and stuff like that?
So Canadians have a unique situation with the U.S. since we're so close. The U.S.-Canadian tax treaty allows amateur or recreational Canadian gamblers to come to the U.S. and file a tax return. So if you come down to the U.S. and, you know, you win $50,000, the U.S. is going to withhold 30% right off the top, just as it does for pretty much all non-residents, unless there's a specific exemption. But then at the end of the year, you can file a tax return and say, I did win, you know, $50,000 in this one event, but I have $30,000 worth of losses in other events. You file a tax return and you're only going to pay 30% on the $20,000. So the U.S. will actually send you the difference based off of your net winnings. So as recreational gamblers, Canada is the only country that's allowed. As far as the rest of the world, certain countries have a treaty with the U.S. where you don't have to pay tax at all. So if you live in the U.K. or Germany or countries, a lot of European countries, you won't even have to pay tax or have it withheld in certain situations in the U.S. But if you're, let's say, a professional gambler from Mexico or Canada, and there's not a specific treaty that doesn't allow for withholding, you can file a tax return in the U.S., but only because you are doing business in the U.S. as a self-employed individual. So if you're a recreational gambler from Canada, or sorry, from Mexico, no tax treaty, you can't do the special 30% netting that Canada can do. But if you're a professional gambler, you can go ahead and file a tax return in the U.S. You can net your winnings, your losses, and then your necessary expenses to get here. And then you'll only pay tax on the net amount at U.S. tax rates. So there's three different scenarios. One, recreational gamblers from Canada, they'll pay 30% on their net winnings. Two, treaties, you don't have to pay any tax at all. And then three, professional gamblers, they'll pay U.S. tax rates, so whatever the marginal tax rate is, on their net earnings.
Awesome. That's great. Yeah, that's super helpful, because I've always wondered about it. And I've had some back and forth with, you know, some friends from the States and with Jim and stuff about, you know, what's the tax situation. So I kind of had an idea, but that really helps clarify it and kind of in my mind anyway. So yeah, I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a two-step process. You have to get a U.S. taxpayer identification number. And then once you have that, you can file a tax return. But the process itself is, while it's not the most time-intensive process, the IRS does not rush when they process right. these returns. Yeah. So in general, the process takes 6 to 8 months, which is quite unfortunate because that's from the time the return is filed. Most of the time, if you're here for the World Series, this happens in July. Can't file a tax return until at the earliest February. So you're waiting till November at the very earliest of the next year before you might even have any chance of getting the money back.
So I suppose the best route is, if you don't want to have any tax concerns, just don't have any winnings.
And then exactly. Okay. Exactly. Or you play a daily, a $250 deep stack, and then you make a deal where you get paid more than whatever you're taking. And then that way they won't withhold.
Yes. So, and this is really an issue for withholding circumstances only, what we're talking about here, which is where you've hit a certain threshold in winnings. And so the casino is just holding on to a portion of that. And we talked about, for Canadians, this is 30%. So I want to just take off. I know Keith has something he wants to ask. We've got some good questions in the YouTube chat here, but because this comes up in staking conversations as well. So for instance, like, let's say I'm going to play a tournament in the States I win $20,000. I've got backers for half of it, let's say. And you'd think, okay, well, they get, you know, their share of $10,000. But if I'm actually only bringing $14,000 back with me, then we have to tell, like, basically what ends up happening is I'm like, all right, well, here's your half of what I've got. And then the rest is going to have to come after we file, you know, a year and a half from now. We can get the rest if we can. And Zach, you're saying that, again, just specifically to Canada, you have to bring that number down by offsetting losses at other events or in other acts of gambling throughout the year. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah. So first, yeah, it's only going to be US winnings and losses. So anything that happens in Canada cannot be shown on your US tax return. So it's going to be US winnings offset by US losses. And then from a backer standpoint, if you end up being backed by a US player, you're going to need to obviously disclose that beforehand and come to an agreement saying, hey, look, if I do win, you're going to get your half of my 70%. And then when I file my tax return, if I get any back, you'll get 50% of that as well. Or say, hey, look, I'm going to give you 60% instead of 50%. And then whatever happens from a tax return standpoint, I can keep. You have to kind of figure out what you want to do with that person individually.
So you're saying I'm going to have to go traveling around the States, losing a bunch of money in poker tournaments for the next 6 or 12 months. That's actually something, that's an idea I could get my head behind, Zach.
There you go. Just take a quick tour and see what the tournament series are like. It's beautiful.
All right. Well, if folks stick around to the end of the episode, there's some news coming that I think they're going to enjoy. Keith,
you're playing at a discount.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, go ahead, Keith.
Yeah, one of the YouTube chatters had a great question here. What would be your advice for somebody who wins some money on a US facing site like America's Card Room, or if you're in a state that does not have online gaming?
Yeah, it's going to be treated the same as if you had winnings from a regulated casino. I know a lot of people will approach me and say, hey, look, I have money on ACR, or I have money on, you know, Poker Bros, whatever it is. I get paid in Bitcoin. Nobody knows that this money exists. While that's true, you still have a requirement to report that money. So you're going to need to track everything that happens on whatever site it is, regulated or not. Whether you take the money off the site or not, it's still winnings once it's in your account and accessible to you to withdraw. So if you win $50,000 on December 29th, and you don't take it out until January 15th, it's still going to be taxable in that the year of December 29th. So anything that happens on those sites, regardless of the legality, if you want to call it that, of their presence in the US, still needs to be reported.
So what I'm hearing is that a lot of this is the burden of reporting that falls on you as a recreational player or as a professional player. This is just something that we should all be paying a little more attention to, because even if it doesn't feel significant in your day to day, you don't know when later in the year it might become something that's very, very relevant to you. And you outlined at the beginning, Zach, some of those sort of unforeseen circumstances that might arise out of having an unexpectedly high tax threshold in 1 year because you took this hit and can't do anything about it. There's a couple more questions in the YouTube chat, and then we'll let you get on your way, Zach. Thanks. This has been a really interesting conversation. I knew it would be. And folks, we're kind of talking about stuff that you can pay attention to all year round. I think this has been such a good interview, Zach. Let's have you back sometime in the new year before the filing deadline comes up, and we can talk a little more on a more granular level about maybe how to file and problems that people have with filing itself and that kind of thing.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know that I'm not the most popular person in the middle of August, but I do pick up my little bit more popularity in February. So you know, anytime around February, totally understand that people now want to pay attention. August, yeah. I also understand if it's not at the top of your list of things to do.
Well, no, but you'd be surprised.
Zach, you're my hero. I mean, this stuff makes me like, oh, this is all money I can save or I can do.
Exactly.
You're my bud.
And that's the thing. You got to think about this before December 31st, because once the year ends, you're very limited in the amount of planning and saving you can do for this year. So once January 1st rolls around, there's only one or two things that you can maybe do to go ahead and reduce your taxes.
Yeah, great point. Another good question from the YouTube chat is from Evil Roy Slade. It says, do you know Canadian or U.S. tax issues for playing in the Bahamas? I know there's a popular Bahamas event coming up that a few people have talked about going to, and I've heard some horror stories about people trying to get money out of there.
Yeah, so I don't know if the Bahamas is going to be withholding. I know that there were issues about paying local tax down there. Haven't seen anything pop up that has clarified what's happening. But as a U.S. citizen, wherever you go and play, you owe tax in the U.S. So whether you go and you play in the Bahamas or in Canada or in the U.K., it doesn't matter what that country's tax laws are. You might need to abide by whatever their laws are and pay income tax there, but you still need to pay tax in the U.S. So no matter where you're traveling to, whether or not they end up assessing you a tax or not, you're still going to include that as income in the U.S.
And Jeff Cat had a question here about offsite sites that Keith was kind of getting at earlier. And I just want to summarize. So it sounds like you're saying that sending money, receiving money, you don't know if the client that you're working with is, you know, what tax protocol they're filing or following rather. So you really have to just assume that you're taxable in all these cases. If you're making money from gambling and you're living in the U.S., then you are subject to taxation on those winnings. Is that
right? Yeah. In my opinion, playing poker online, whether it's regulated or not, the legality of that is still up for debate. I mean, even when Black Friday happened, no players were persecuted. It was just the people facilitating the transactions. So whether or not it's legal, it doesn't matter for tax purposes. So whether you're doing something illegal or legal, you still need to report it. That way, you know that all money is taxed appropriately, and then you're in the clear. So although you might have a concern about if what you're doing is going to be, you know, breaking terms or conditions of the site or being legal or not, from a tax perspective, the IRS doesn't care.
And the last question we got here from my friend Joseph. So what happens after winning a progressive jackpot, like in the casino? So does the casino withhold funds? What paperwork is there? How do I write it off? And am I a professional now?
It depends. If you present the casino with all the necessary information and you're a U.S. resident, they won't require withholding. So unless you don't have proper identification or something along that lines, they won't withhold any tax. You can choose to have tax withheld, and you're essentially just making an estimated tax payment. If you don't want to deal with it in April, or you don't want to face a penalty, or you don't trust yourself with the money, you want to just get it to the IRS, they can remit it for you. They'll pay you however you want, whether it's a check or in chips or in cash, usually it's going to be a check. And then from there on out, you have a decision to make. If you are a recreational gambler, you can just, hey, I want all this money, I'll pay some tax on it. If you know you're going to continue to gamble, you can do so at a reduced rate throughout the rest of the year. And then, like I said, if you're a recreational gambler, there's not a whole lot of planning you can do, because you can really only offset your wins with your losses. So if I see somebody that may have a large win come November, I'm going to say, hey, look, if you plan on playing a tournament series in, let's just say, January, where you're going to take a shot, you're going to play in the main event or a higher stake offering for that tournament, do it in December. Because we already know you have winnings in December and you can offset those. Next year, you might have a losing year and you might lose those buy-ins. So if we're going to take shots, we'll take it shots in December. But other than that, it's really just how much do you like to gamble and how much do you want to gamble at a discount now that you have this larger sum of money?
Yeah. And you can see why, you know, people can get in a little trouble kind of chasing that too, right? Because now they're like, that feeling of having a discount is, you know, that's not always great for the mindset going into like rebuy and fire again at another tournament. But I take your point. I mean, yeah.
In poker tournaments, it's not so bad. I mean, let's just say you won $600,000, you're going to be in the top tax bracket. If you want to go play bigger events, you can sell part of your action, and then you're only playing at, you know, 63% before that anyway. So it's not the worst case scenario. It's a little bit different if you're only playing slots by yourself. But if it's from a poker standpoint and you want to go ahead and sell some of your action, it's really not that bad of a place to be.
This is really interesting. All right. One more question from Joe, and then Zach will send you on your way. Thanks again for a great interview today.
Yeah.
So you made a discussion point about marginal tax rates before, but at times gambling winnings and so on can be taxed at the top at a set rate. Or which is it? Is it because marginal tax rates make a difference as you go down in terms of how much money you should lose against it if you can get into a different tax bracket, it makes a huge difference in terms of what you have to pay. But if you always pay at the top rate, it doesn't matter, right? Which is
there's a surprising amount of information out there that says that gambling winnings are taxed at a flat rate, whether it's 25% or whatever it might be. But it's treated for, especially for recreational gamblers, but for pros as well, as other income or as business income. And it will be, you will assess tax at your marginal rate. So what I tell people is, hey, look, if you have work from your day job, just stack this income on top of that, whatever tax bracket it puts you into. Only those earnings that are above that threshold are going to be taxed at that rate anyway. So it's not like if I have $50,000 worth of gambling winnings and I'm now in the 24% tax bracket, all of a sudden all my wages are now taxed at 24%. It's only, you know, that portion of the gambling winnings that are over 24%. So you'll only, I tell people to stack it on top. It's just easy to visualize it that way. But all of your income is essentially forming a totem pole, and however you want to stack it, a certain portion of it will be assessed at the highest tax rate based off of how much money you make.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Yep.
All right. So Zach, if folks want to crack that brain open and see what's inside it on a one-on-one level or catch up with you on social, what's the best way for people to reach out to you throughout the year for advice in this area?
I'd say by email. My email is zach@zackthecpa.com. But if you want to reach out on Twitter as well, I'm there at zackthecpa. It's just Z-A-K, the CPA. But like I said, if you send me an email and you want to discuss something, I'm pretty responsive. I'll usually get back to you within, you know, 24 hours or so and see if I can help out.
Great. And I'll put your Twitter handle and the website in the show notes here. So folks, if you're watching and listening on your phone, just click over to the show notes and you can find Zach tagged there. Zach with a K. Zach, this was fantastic, man. So let's get together again as maybe just before you get really in demand. Let's talk January or something like that.
January is perfect. January is the calm before the storm. So January looks great.
All right. That sounds great. Well, and if folks have any other questions in the meantime, they'll reach out. Zach, thanks again for your time and enjoy the rest of the fall before you start getting real, real busy again.
Appreciate that. Thank you guys for having me on. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thanks, Zach. Sounds good.
Bye.
Well, thank you. We're going to talk about some home game results coming up here, and we're also going to be going through some raffle winners. I'm also excited. We've got some interesting and exciting events coming up. Let's start with that, I guess. So if you're watching this live, it's Monday night. It's August 21st, and we'll be recording the forums edition of the podcast afterwards. One of the perks of being a premium member is you're welcome to come join us in the forums and bring a hand or a spot of your own to talk about with the panel on the air. It's a great time. I always love it when premium members join us here, so feel free to do that. Tomorrow night is August 22nd. If you're listening live, again, you'll have a chance to join Kim Kilroy for a hand history review session. This week is going to be free for all community members. So if you're watching this live, even if you're not a premium member, you can join for free. The subject is going to be taking good notes, what to record for your hand history when you're talking about it with friends or buddies or a coach or putting it in the forums. What are the mistakes that people make when writing hands down? How can you do it more efficiently and more comprehensively? That's on the 22nd. I think that's going to be a lot of fun. I guess I should tell folks to start typing the words food bank into the YouTube chat because we'll be doing a draw at the end of the episode. In fact, I'm going to stop sharing my audio so that Joe can prepare to share his video of the dice, the DisoCam, as we will roll to find out who our winner is going to be tonight. While people are typing the food bank in, I also want to point out, I know John's on top of this, but coming up in about a month, September 16th is the next Heads Up Challenge on Saturday, September 16th. It's on the third Saturday of June, September, and December. We'll find out who is going to be this quarter's qualifier for Marek Madness in April of 2012, in March, I should say, of 2024. And finally, our own Ben Enslow has some exciting news. Ben, why don't you unmute and tell us all about what's going on with you and Twitch and ACR and what we can do to get more involved?
Yeah, so Got some big exciting stuff going on over there. So on August 14th, we kicked off the Stream Big, they're calling it, ACR, to become the next ACR Poker Stormer. So what a Stormer is they basically represent ACR or America's Card Room in all their streams and everything they do, and they go out live on Twitch. So that's what we're trying to do, and you get some kind of monetary... you know, you get paid to do it, basically. I was trying to be fancy with how I said it, but it didn't work out. So that's all. That's super exciting. So, yeah, the winners get a 250 home game guaranteed. I'm not sure what the buy-in is on that, but they just said that they were going to do a 250 guaranteed home game in your name. So it would be BJamin's home game on ACR. And then we get $1,000 to give away in tickets to the community. And there's going to be two winners. There's a ton of really good streamers in there, so we got to put our big boy shoes on and try and really work hard at it and get some more viewers in the chat and stuff like that. So the big thing is if you can just stop in, even for a few minutes, just pop in like Joe popped in this weekend, just for a few minutes, just to say hi or pick on me and about me complaining about running bad if you want or... stuff like that. It's all good. So I'm pretty open. I'm this is who I am. So it's pretty easy to figure me out and stuff like that. So if you want to come in, hang out, find out more about me, it's all good. And yeah, and you can also knock me out of the home game on Saturday morning and win a free month of Rec Poker Premium membership. And so that's really cool as well. So I figured I'd throw that out there just to remind everybody about that.
Awesome. And so is that the one thing that really moves the needle for this, is for people to visit the Twitch stream?
Well, I'm not 100% sure, but that's kind of what I'm going off of, is just, you know, having involvement, having people in the chat, you know, even like, you know, having a little bit of banter back and forth, or, you know, if you're running in a tournament or something like that, let me know, here you go, how you're doing, and, you know, just things like that, or even just let me know about your day or things like that. Like I say, I don't know if it's all about that. I think eventually we'll have to get some sign up somehow. But we're going to see how the month develops. We're still early in. It's only the 21st of September, so we got a couple of weeks left. So my Twitch handle is BJamin96. So it's basically Benjamin with no N. And that's over on twitch.tv, so you can check me out over there.
And if you also head over to Ben's Twitter page, he's got the link there as well, and his Wrecking Crew page as well. Don't hesitate. Ben has a lot of fun. He's got a couple tables up. He's always got a good attitude. And he's got some sweet moderators, too. I know there's some other poker folks that really hang out and have a great time with you there, too. So thanks for putting those on, Ben. It is a great time.
Yeah, I've been, you know, trying to do it consistently every single Friday and Saturday, and especially with the home games and stuff. I've been playing those internationals for so long that I almost feel bad now. And that, you know, I missed the late reg on the afternoon one this weekend. Oh no, I missed late reg. So always like getting involved there. I still remember when I played Keith actually heads up for my first ever international win. And I was going back through some old stream clips and stuff like that. And I seen the clip of us playing heads up. So I thought that,
and he beat me too.
Yeah, I did.
That's awesome. Joe, did you have something else there?
I was just going to say that I've been going and kind of popping in on Friday afternoons for a little while on Ben's stream, and Saturdays as well. It's well worth it. It's, you know, it's low key. It's an opportunity to kind of hang out with Ben. He's a cool guy. He plays some interesting poker, talks about his hands, and every once in a while he has some guests on the Twitch stream, which are interesting to just read some of the chat. So if you got a few minutes, go pop in. It's well worth it.
Yeah, and if you don't know what's what, head on over to rec.poker, and if right there on the homepage, one of the first things you'll see is a calendar for this week, and all the yellow items are home games that are coming up, and all the blue items are live engaging sessions like this, whether it's over Zoom or YouTube or Twitch. And you can usually find Ben up there on Fridays and Saturdays doing his thing. So do go and check that out. And the last thing we'll mention before we get into John Somsky's home game report, speaking of dropping in on fun people, we've got some road trips coming up, folks. So I teased it at the top of the show. And now after talking to Zach, I know I've got a burden I have to sort of travel around the States for a little bit this year, losing money in easily trackable poker tournaments so I can write off all my winnings. So we're going to start that at by signing up to some Run Good events that are coming up over the next few months. So this, listen, if you're anywhere near Council Bluffs, Iowa, from November 14th to 19th, then come on by. We are going to have an amazing series of events there, social events, training events. We're going to have our own cash game table like we usually do. We're going to be meeting and greeting, giving away prizes. So Council Bluffs, Iowa, November 14th to 19th. Really, if you're making one Rec Poker road trip this fall, that's the one to make. But Run Good's too much fun not to spend more time with them. So I'm actually going to be driving down to Baltimore with Kim and Stu and some other members. That's from September 4th through 8th. That's right around the corner after Labor Day. If anyone's in the Baltimore area, we'll be playing at the Horseshoe Casino there as part of the Run Good series. It's running from the 5th to the 10th. And then also in Cleveland from November 2nd. I mean, the Run Good event in Cleveland at Jack Casino there is from November 2nd to 14th, I think. We won't be there for that long, but maybe from like the 2nd to the 6th or something like that. If you're in the Cleveland area and you want to hang out and have a drink and play some cards and meet some Rec Poker folks, think about joining us in that first week of Cleveland, first week of November for Cleveland. But the real one, like I mentioned, Council Bluffs, Iowa, the Horseshoe Casino, November 14th through 19th. Don't miss that one. We're going to have a lot of fun people there and we're going to have a great time. So I hope people can make a trip out for that. And if you just check our website, if you go to rec.poker/events, you'll see a list of all the upcoming events, home games, premium membership opportunities online, live events like these Run Good road trips. And pretty soon we're going to be talking about making another trip back out there to Running Aces. Folks, I know I'm excited too. Speaking of excitement, John, you've got some other exciting news about the home games. It's not just about winners and well, it's never really about losers. We just talked about the winners, but we've got some cool stuff coming.
Yeah, basically, everyone was saying they really hate missing the home games. So, you know, it was really impacting their lives. They couldn't go out. They couldn't do anything. So they were missing their friends and family. So what we have decided to do is starting in September, we are no longer going to have evening tournaments on Thursdays, Fridays, and Saturdays. So those are the nights you can do poker study without being interrupted. You can spend time with your friends and families. All of those types of great things. We are going to be moving the mixed series to Wednesday nights that after the first 2 weeks of the month. So there'll either be two or three mixed practice games on the remaining Wednesdays in the month. And other than that, pretty much everything else is going to remain the same. There'll still be the LPP events. We are still doing the Saturday morning events for the international series. And we are still doing, you know, the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday events. So now you can actually have a life. I am freeing you from your obligation of playing all of the home games.
That's right. That's John's gift. John's gift to us is we get our weekends back. It'll be a bit of an adjustment, but we did look at all the different games that get played in a month. And the Thursday, Friday, Saturday night series just weren't getting as many runners as some of the other ones. I think those are popular nights for people to do other activities. But like John says, we're still doing Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and two on Saturday, the morning and the afternoon international series. And we're going to just slide those Saturday night mixed practice games into Wednesday evenings instead after the monthly championships. So you'll see a blog post coming out about this before September 1st rolls around, and grant us a little grace as we make some adjustments into the first month of the new cycle. You never know if some things might not get coded perfectly with the new PokerStars software. And of course, let us know. Give us some feedback on how you feel about this sort of thing. We did look at a bunch of different ways to organize these things. These were the nights that didn't seem to be getting as many runners, like we say. And so we just decided to to put all our eggs in these other baskets. And I hope that it means that people can still enjoy as much rec poker as they can stand. I think it's still 6 or 7 games a week. So there's still an average of about a game a day in there. So for all you play money home game junkies, don't worry. And the good news is...
Yeah, I had two quick thoughts. My first thought was the value of a pin is going up now.
That's it. Yeah.
And I'm going to have to play every single home game until this switch takes effect.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the Tournament of Champions, I think, will probably have fewer runners in it, too. So it also means that you've got a better chance, at least fewer people standing between you and that silver pin at the end of the month. So, so I think that we're also going to be looking at adding some value to the home game club when it comes to different kind of prizes we can give out. If we're going to have fewer nights with games, maybe we can get a couple other nights with a sponsor every week. Maybe we can have some fun promotional layer for premium members. We're still working some of those details out, but the first step was to sort of get this new schedule set up. And there you go. John has announced it, and you've got until the end of August to keep playing 11 home games a week here at Rec Poker. And then we're going to start cranking it back and give everyone their weekend back. But thanks, John. It's amazing what you continue to do here for our membership. I know people appreciate all the time that you put into our home game club. It's one of my favorite things we do here at Rec Poker.
And just as another clarification, the heads up events will still be going on Saturdays as well. So we will not be bypassing those.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to pre-interrupt you here. Charles has a question in the YouTube chat. The Baltimore Run Good event, that is coming up, Charles. That's from September 5th through 10th. I'm going to be driving down with Kim and Stu on the 4th, and we're staying there. I think we're leaving on the 8th or the 9th. We won't stay right till the end of it. But if you want to come and hang out, boy, that would be a fun place. Baltimore's got some cool stuff going on, and it'll be a great event there because Run Good only does great events. So come win a ring and hang out and play some cards with us. So yeah, John, what's been up? What's up this week in the Home Game Club?
Well, first and foremost, Kelly S. 1962-20, Kelly Stork, won the daily TOC. This is her second lifetime TOC, and she is the 8th two-time winner of a daily TOC. Mm. So, an exclusive club.
Very amazing. Way to go, Kelly.
Jeff Setum, Jeff S., got his 3rd nightly victory for the year. A really mad guy, got his 5th nightly victory for the year.
Bunch of regulars.
Gen G88, Jennifer Galloway, got her first nightly victory for the year. Evil Roy CA, David Westerville, got his 5th nightly victory for the year. Oh, and that puts him at 59 lifetime.
Whoa!
Events.
He just like blew past 50. That's amazing. Yep. Okay, super. Well, I'm glad we're having fewer of these, frankly, because this was going to get awkward otherwise.
GF Hawk, Eric Romo, got his 7th nightly victory for the year. Zen Heart's Shadow, Sarah Coates, who I found out I've been mispronouncing that forever, got her 1st nightly victory for the year.
Let me get a real interruption here then. You also mispronounced Marcel Dusik's name a couple weeks ago, and he wanted to reach out over Twitter and just make sure that we know it's not Dusik or Dusek. It's Marcel Dusik, and he wins a few of these. So, you know, now you know.
I do know, but Marcel, odds are I will mispronounce it again because that's just how I roll.
Thanks for the support, Marcel.
Then we have Poker Geek MN, John Somsky.
Wow.
Got his 3rd daily mixed victory for the year.
Buddy's on a roll.
Shark Slayer 21, Lucky Hawes. Got his 1st international victory for the year. Killy 19341, Rich Deacons, who lives in Alaska.
Now who's doxing?
I'm not doxing. I actually, when I went on an Alaska cruise, he gave me a tour all throughout Alaska.
Okay.
So, you know, I just want to thank him for that.
There you go. It's anyway, a big place. It's a big place. He could be in any different parts of Alaska. It's not like you actually said he was in Anchorage.
Well, right. I didn't say that because that would have been wrong. But that was his fourth daily victory, international victory for the year. And then Poker Geek MN John Somsky won the LPP event. So he can contact info@rec.poker for his free month at Learn Pro Poker.
Rigged. Rigged.
Just shows anyone can get lucky.
He knocked me out of that tournament, if I remember correctly. So.
Way to go, John. Just climbing the ranks again.
Yeah, I have. Well, I am slightly over half the number of victories that Evil Roy CA has. So by that, you know, I don't know. I should extrapolate and figure out how long it's going to take me to get to 50, but I guess it'll be after he gets to 100.
It looks like it. It looks like it. Well, seriously, congratulations, though.
It's too depressing.
You don't want to do that. You don't want to do that.
I've done my calculation. It's like 8,000 years. So, I, you know, just don't do it.
We've got a comment from Bradley Smith in the YouTube chat. Says, sorry, but it's disappointing to reduce the home games. As winter starts, I'm sure the runners will grow again. Yeah, and Bradley, this isn't necessarily, you know, forever. And thank you for your feedback. And we want to hear from you whether you think it's a good idea or a bad idea. And listen, if enough people push back, like I say, we're just trying to sort of follow the desires of the group and to sort of resource the areas that people want to take advantage of. But send us an email, send an email to info@rec.poker and let us know, hey, you know, I really was enjoying those Thursday, Friday, Saturday night tournaments, and you know, not having them is a problem. And you know, let us know. We are here to serve. So, and we don't mind getting bad news. Don't have to sugarcoat stuff for us. We're poker players. We're used to getting it straight. So don't hesitate. All right. Well, I guess on that note, I just want to say thanks to everyone for your support over the years. Zach was a fantastic guest. Why don't we do our roll now and see who is going to win the food bank drive, the food bank prize. So every week we want to just make people think about the fact that there's folks in the world that are starving or maybe just having trouble putting food on the table for themselves or their kids. And if you Google food banks near me on your smartphone right now, you'll find an organization that could use your help, whether it's through a few dollars, a few hours of your time, or a non-perishable food item. And so we give away a prize every week on the podcast for the folks that type food bank into the chat. I see Charles, type login, Stuart, and Luke in that order as the four that I see. Joe, you are the DisoCam pro tonight. So if you see the four as well, let's take a roll and see who the winner is going to be.
Here it goes.
All right. It's a roll. Looks like, is it a three?
Three.
I see a three as well. So let's see who in which I've already forgotten. Stuart Carriage. Stuart, you have won a fantastic prize. You're already a Rec Poker Premium member. And so, you know, you're in for something good. Stu is actually going to be in the car with me in a couple of weeks as we drive down to Baltimore for the Run Good event that I'm really looking forward to. So, Stu, if we haven't figured something out by then, I guess I've at least got the next Tim Hortons. I'll get that first round of Timmy's as we start that drive down.
Don't go in his basement before you get in his car. Just, you know, have the safe word. Send it to me if you need to text it. Just let me know.
Or either one of his basements. He's doing some remodeling it to dump the torture.
That's true. Yeah, it feels like torture. Boy, let me tell you. Oh, you know all about that, John. John's actually building a house right now, so don't get him started on horror stories. All right, folks, let's let this group get the heck out of here. I'm even going to remember to share my audio again, like a freaking professional podcast host. And then I really want to thank everyone in the YouTube chat for having a great time with us tonight. For John, Keith, Ben, and Joe. Of course, to Zach, the CPA, for his fantastic insights today. And for you, the listeners, we wouldn't do it without you. So thanks for tuning in this week and every week. And on behalf of everyone here at Rec Poker, I'll see you again soon, I hope. Have a great
week, everybody.